Well, when enough is never enough is what they find. If it takes the same dose of a drug over and over for my body to begin to tolerate it, I will need to take a higher dose of the drug in order for it to have the same effect that it did with the lower dose the first time. When men are stimulated by ambient sexual images and then by explicit pornography, it increases the effect. Something about pornography pulls and pushes at a male's soul. An image begins to pick up steam, and no longer does he just look at it. It gains momentum, and he can reach a point when it feels like he is a tractor trailer truck rolling downhill with no brakes. But Struthers does not leave his argument to neuroscience, nor does he use the category of addiction to mitigate the sinfulness of viewing pornography. Sinners always look for fig leaves to hide their sin. And biological causation is often cited as a means of avoiding moral responsibility. But the addict is always responsible for his addiction. Look back at Psalm 32, because the addict, at whatever level David had gotten to, explains his responsibility for his addiction. Because David took that road back to God. When the initial consequences, remember the that which precipitated Psalm 32 is 2 Samuel 12's confrontation by Nathan the prophet. And when that initial consequence of guilt and shame multiplied, David finally came to the end of himself. He repented and sought God's cleansing from the power and stain of sin. That's why he says, how blessed is he who's not his neurological or addictive behavior that he's not responsible for. No, he says, whose transgression? He said that it was my personal choice to defy God's law. That's been removed. Why? Because he took responsibility for it. The second line, whose sin? Again, I have missed the mark. God says, this is where I'm supposed to be. That's where I am. That was my choice to miss the mark. My sin, he says in the second stanza of verse 1, is covered. It has had the Revelation 1:5, as we would look at it, the blood of Christ to wash and to loose him. David had deeply reflected on his sin. He had one of his most loyal friends murdered. He took that friend's wife as his very own. He angered her family, which included two of his most trusted bodyguards and one of his most senior advisors. See, David's sin was far more than just Bathsheba and Uriah. It just rippled through the entire court of the king. It took his life into a complete downward spiral, not only inside, but with those around him. And now God has revealed to the whole world why his baby died, why his loyal friend was killed, and what David had been up to when everybody else was out of town. See, that was the ultimate humiliation of David. But David, no matter how stricken with guilt and with his pride being crushed, David longed for God's forgiveness. But in the back of his mind, David, who had known the Lord so well, so close, wondered, can I ever be completely forgiven? That's why the second stanza, he said, blessed is the man, in verse 2, to whom the Lord does not impute, doesn't log it in the record book, doesn't charge it to the account of the one that commits it. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity. You know, that word iniquity we study means warped behavior. David says this was warped. David says, in light of my horrendous sin, will God completely forgive me? And that's what Psalm 32 becomes. It's a place to flee if you ever find yourself wondering what David wondered. The last part of verse 2, in whose spirit there is no deceit. Usually hand in hand with corrosive sin is deceitful behavior to cover it. is this internal hardening of the heart as it's covered and covered and covered. Just like deceit softens up a situation and takes away the potential damage we'll get, in the process of us softening the situation, it hardens our hearts. And that's why in the second verse, David says, there's no more deceit, no more covering. I don't want any more hardness of heart. David experienced what we celebrate at communion. The miracle of salvation is that the one who loved us and loosed us from our sin has completely forgiven us. He does not impute. He doesn't write in the record book a record of our sin. He says it is forever gone. The Gospels record 37 specific miracles that Jesus performed during his life. 60% of those he performed around the Sea of Galilee. In fact, 60% of them he performed in the northwest corner of the Sea of Galilee. But of those 37 recorded miracles, all of them were wonderful. But sadly, if you analyze all 37, every one of those were temporary. Every one of those paralyzed people Jesus restored, the usage of their limbs, by the time they got to the end of their life, they were back to impairment. Every set of eyes Jesus restored to the blind, by the time they got to the end of their life, they were starting to fade. And on we could go. The food that Jesus miraculously created to feed thousands was consumed and used up, and their hunger returned the next day. Every miracle Jesus did was temporary. But the greatest of all Christ's amazing miracles was the one that has never faded. In fact, it's the one that people that have died and are around the throne right now are singing about. The one who loved them, redeemed them, forgave them. The greatest of Christ's miracles is the one that Jesus still performs every day. It's the miracle of Psalm 32, 1 and 2, complete forgiveness. Now, for us, it's very hard to think of complete forgiveness because we attach to people that sin against us a hurt that's hard to forget. But Jesus said, I have taken the penalty upon myself. So I have been hurt, but my hurt for you is because I love you. And I was hurt by your transgressions. In my body, I was pierced through for your iniquities. And the stripes that pummeled my body are what heals you. But he said, I did that because of my love. Up until the moments just before Psalm 32, a distraught David was uncertain about the total forgiveness that God would give. But as the Spirit of God moved upon him, and as in his heart he believed the truth that a substitute, a sacrifice that was not guilty, would be offered in his place, and David looked beyond that lamb and that altar, and he saw the promised one, David trusted in another to take his place. Psalm 32 was David's song of testimony. It was his joyful heart praising God for complete forgiveness. You know, the greatest miracle that Jesus performed was every time he would solve the physical thing, but he'd say to those that he healed, go and sin no more, or your sins are forgiven you. You see, that's the ultimate touch of Jesus. And that's the touch, especially in light of Revelation 1:5, that all of us need to remember. Because Satan wants to say, you have sinned one too many times, and you can't get out of that ditch. And Jesus extends his hand and says, let me touch your life. I love you. Let me loose you and wash you and free you from your sins again. Remember what it says in Hebrews 7, he saves us to the uttermost. That means he keeps coming to the ditch when we go into sin and keeps pulling us out, washing us up, clothing us anew and afresh so that we can come before him boldly.